There's an easy way out and a hard way out, and you can't always tell which is which. We talk with Sally L. Hosseini and James Floyd about My Brother the Devil on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast.
This is my life, and I'm gonna live it the best way I can. I'ma push it to the limit. This is my life, my life, my life, my life. I'ma keep grinding, I'ma keep hustling. As long as I'm alive, I'ma keep getting money. This is my life, my life, my life, my life.
Welcome to MMP, brought to you courtesy of the Chronic Riff Network. I'm Dan Persons. My Brother the Devil is about Rashid, played by James Floyd, and Mo, played by Fadi El-Sayed. They are two brothers growing up in the London neighborhood of Hackney in an Egyptian household. Rashid has been a low-level drug dealer, but is now seeking a way out, even as his compatriots are luring Mo into the life. And what sets My Brother the Devil apart from similar tales is the credible world director Sally L. Hosseini has built in this poor neighborhood, the incredible look to the cinematography that still feels spontaneous, and Hosseini's willingness to test her characters and their world with some surprising twists, including but not limited to Rashid falling in love with a handsome photographer. So I got a chance to talk both with director Hosseini and star James Floyd, and here's what we talked about. The thing that I really liked about this is I went into the film and I started watching it. First few minutes, I went, oh, I know what this film is about. And then the film goes, no, you don't. Sally, did you consider this type of film, or the predecessors, you know, this sort of social drama, did you consider the type of film that it usually is and think about where you wanted to take it?
Absolutely. I mean, in a way, everything you've watched and experienced before, you know, takes you to where you are now. So, of course, I had digested all those films and knew the expectations of that kind of world in film, and definitely one of my intentions was to be a bit subversive and to flip the expectations and to show kind of other sides and a deeper understanding of what I've usually seen in these films. So, you know, if those films hadn't existed, then I wouldn't have had something to spin and turn on its head. So, it, you know, I was very conscious of that, and I suppose it came down also to the fact that I had seen a lot of stereotypes, for example, even of just Arab characters, and I really set out to make the film that wasn't about terrorists and that were a depiction of Arab characters as heroes and three-dimensional characters in a way that, you know, they don't have that representation in cinema. And that was one of the challenges for me. So even having Arabic characters as three-dimensional heroes to me is being subversive in cinema. For example, using the terrorist line in the film as a kind of playful aside, I'd rather have a brother who's a terrorist than gay. Mm-hmm. To me was, and interestingly, I get a lot of laughs from younger audiences at that point, and they find it quite funny. But it is very true, you know, to the world, and it was something that I saw and observed. I don't know where I'm going. I'm babbling.
No, you're not. You're fine. James, looking through the script, your first exposure your first exposure to Rashid. What was your reaction to the story and to how your character developed?
Totally unoriginal. Very cliched.
And we're out of here. Good night, folks.
I did it for the money. I got paid a lot of money for this. The opposite of what I just said. I've said this a bazillion times, but it's true. It was the best script I'd read. I mean, I've read a lot of scripts in 7 years. Just in terms of the way it was structured, in terms of the fact it was a real page turner, but, you know, and it has these twists
the
and turns.
The characters you liked as well.
Yeah, it has twists and turns, but every twist and turn is justified. It's not forced. And the characters were just there on the page. They were just so full, and they were just so complex and real, you know. And in film, that's very unusual. You know, I think film is, you know, it's a big business commercial medium, and it's a lot of the characters I find on film just very two-dimensional. So it was especially Arab characters, like you said. I mean, if I read another script that has an Arab who is either a terrorist or will become a terrorist at some point, you know, I'm going to go crazy. And it's and not to say, you know, look, there are characters that you can do that and make it interesting, but that's rare, you know. So there were many things, but I think the main thing for me was actually meeting Sally and auditioning for it, because we clicked, you know, instantaneously at the audition. We high-fived and we had out with the same ideas and everything. So once I met her, I was like, wow, I really want to make a movie with this person. I really think that when you meet a filmmaker, well, I think anyway, when I meet a filmmaker now, I think 9 times out of 10, I can know what kind of film they're going to make and whether it's going to be any good. Because, you know, ultimately it's your feelings and your sensibilities that bleed onto the screen, you know, especially when you're a very personal filmmaker like Sally is. She's a writer-director and, you know, everything's coming from you. So to me, it was obviously this great script, but it was me and her. It's like, you know, wow, she's the kind of person that you want on your side, you know. And because, you know, especially when you're a lead actor, but when you're an actor in film, you're so reliant on the director and the editor and whoever's responsible for those final takes. You know, your performance is, a lot of it is shaped by the director. So if I didn't have trust in Sally, then I wouldn't have gone, you know, 5-6 months preparing for the role and done all the work I did.
James was on board even before the producers, actually, so it's worth saying that, you know, he believed in the project before we were green lit, and went, and I had spent many years getting to know a lot of boys who were involved in gangs in different parts of London, and James was prepared to work in a very method way and to live with the boys day and night and soak up the world. I had initially wanted a non-actor in the role, and I think I told you that initially.
You did, yeah.
And my fear was having an actor who was going to stand out alongside a cast of largely non-actors, because my radar for what was authentic and real had already developed to quite a sophisticated level. Mm. So I did not want to make a phony film. You know, that was the last thing I wanted to make, and to make sure that the realism and the authenticity was there. So it was music to my ears when I understood that he wanted to work in a very method way, and that Daniel Day-Lewis was a big hero of yours. And, it's true.
In terms of way, yeah, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say hero, but I think actors who are very detailed in their presentation of a performance, it's the kind of stuff I like, because I think that, you know, really, when you're watching a movie, you can subconsciously tell when something's not real. Even if you're watching a huge kind of Disney cartoon, excuse me, it has to come from some sort of human truth. And you can tell as an audience member, you can tell as human beings, you know, and the camera is basically a lie detector. And especially when you've got, you know, CinemaScope close up in your face, I mean, you've got to have reality, otherwise it's not going
to
work.
The decision to, you know, shoot on scope and to, you know, really made this world an adventure rather than kind of the mundane TV images we normally see of this world, and forced us into a lot of close-ups because we were shooting largely on location, couldn't remove just a random wall here and there to fit the camera in. And so I was aware that we were going to be up close to all the characters, so the actors had better be honest, because if they're not, you're going to see it. And, you know, so...
Film wouldn't work.
No. When I was preparing for filming, when we were in prep, I was riding a bus, and there was this boy sitting in front of me, and he had really bad skin, and I remember thinking and going and telling my cinematographer, I want to be so close to the boys and that I can see their bad teeth and their bad skin and their sweat and really, you know, feel them.
It's in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to get back to the cinematography in a bit, but first, James, do you come from method? Is that where your training is?
I don't have any training. I mean, I did a couple of things that were temporary, National Youth Theatre, I don't know if you've heard of, but I never had any full-time training. I mean,
you were studying in LSE when you...
I wasn't studying acting, obviously.
No, you were studying philosophy.
I never studied acting. Yeah, I was studying philosophy. I was on a different path. I think for me, I mean, method is a weird word. I mean, I know you guys use it a lot here, because obviously, you know, it comes from Stanislavski and then via Stella Adler and all these wonderful, you know, Lee Strasberg and Brando and De Niro. But I think, to me, it's just common sense. You know, you just... If you play a character that has very different experiences to you, there's no way you can fake that. You know, the only, so the best, the next best thing is to, of course, you know, try and live it for as much as you can before you get on set. I mean, it's just common sense. So
you like to eat the food that
comes. Yeah, like example is the food. Like, I know it sounds ridiculous, but like I think if you, if you eat the same food that your character would eat, if you, you know, if we, in this case, he was a boxer, but there was a certain way that Rashid would box. We talked about this, right? He isn't just a technical boxer. He's not Floyd Mayweather. He's someone who goes in the gym and takes out all his aggression on a punching bag with no technique. You know, that's the kind of, so you have to be very specific. And I had never boxed before, so it was very important that I, you know, got to the point where I could box the way that Rashid did, and then obviously speaking, walking, all these things. But it's to, you can call it method, but I just think it's logic, really. You know what I mean? It's I never really understood the term method. It's kind of, I mean, Day-Lewis has been called a method actor, but to me, he's just detailed, just prepared.
But also, you know, one thing that really helped was, you know, that Fadi El-Sayed, who played Mo and did an incredible job, he was cast just 2 days before we started filming. And it was his first film, so he hadn't acted before. And part of what I did with Fadi was, you know, contrived a little bit with James, because we decided that we would stay in character the whole time we were shooting. So he only met James as Rashid, so he was only ever his brother. And he actually said afterwards, and in some of the press we've done, he wasn't sure if he liked James because he kept on hitting him all the time.
Yeah, I assumed like a younger brother, like you a little noogie.
And you know, I think having that interaction off camera really informed the performance on camera, because when you're working, you know, with non-actors, it's about, you know, well, I actually said to everybody on the first day, no acting allowed in this movie. You know, it's just about being, and you want that kind of spontaneous feeling. So, for example, the scene where Mo snorts coke.
Great scene.
We actually did that in one take. I said to Fadi beforehand, I took him aside and said, have you ever, you know, tried this? He said, no, but I've seen it in movies and been around it a little bit. So I told everybody on the crew, do not tell him. If he comes to you and asks you how to do it, do not tell him how. And he actually did ask the location manager. The location manager said, I changed the subject and walked on. And so I knew he was unprepared, and I wanted him to be unprepared in that moment. And so I said to him, right, okay, Fadi, we don't have much time. We're up against it. We can only do this in one take, so you've got to give it all to me in one take. And there's that fumbling with the notebook. And I knew that he had the notebook with him, and I hadn't told him what surface on which to... And I just think that is a perfect example of how just throwing yourself in, you know, without a safety net almost, gives you that immediate and spontaneous. And then, of course, you've got to have the amazing crew who can pick it up, like the focus puller, Chris Kane, focusing on the spit just as it hit the ground, in one take. I mean, we're talking...
It's true, yeah.
You know, but for me, that was, you know, part of the... The job of working with non-actors is to not let people become self-conscious or overthink it, and to make them feel very relaxed so that they are able to be completely in the moment. Which comes from my documentary background, I think, as well. You know, I worked on a lot of Middle East documentaries that were often in shooting in difficult situations in war zones and things. And, you know, I spent some time in Baghdad during the war. And, you know, when you're having to react and respond in these situations and get out of an interview exactly what you need in a, you know, manipulate a situation to get what you need in extreme situations, you become adept at that.
It just came to me, do you feel any connection to a filmmaker like Altman? Do you take any inspiration from him in particular, or...
No, actually, my favorite filmmaker is Jacques Audiard, the French filmmaker. We watched actually The Tree of Life when we were preparing for this movie, which helped us devise our kind of slightly subjective camera style in terms of the cinematography. And I'm inspired by Gus Van Sant, Elephant and Paranoid Park as well. And
David O. Russell.
Yeah, we watched The Fighter and for this movie, and at Fassbender, Fury It's the Soul, and other influences, I guess. But you know, the aesthetic and everything comes from the specifics of the story. You know, I I find it a bit strange to think of myself as having a particular style or way, because to me, each story will have the keys to how you need to, it needs to organically grow from the story, and the story has organically grown from the characters, so of course it's going to be unexpected. Well, if you have good characters. So, you said it, the movie wasn't something you expected. I think that's because they are three-dimensional characters, so of course they're going to be unpredictable. And you can only get that unpredictable story if you've got the real characters.
James, I know Sally is from Hackney. Are you from Hackney as well? No. So you hung out with these kids. How did that experience shape your development of Rashid?
Hugely. When I was cast, Sally basically said to me that she knows all these guys that the movie's kind of inspired by, I guess, or at least guys from the world that...
Who had helped me do my research and learn the language.
Right.
In fact, Eamon, just a quick interruption, sorry. Eamon Hamducci, who plays Repo in the film, the one with the tattoo in his neck, he was my script consultant and helped me learn the language and immerse in the world.
Yeah. And Eamon Hamducci was my guy into that world. He was my connection into that world via Sally. So while the movie was struggling to get greenlit, because it was so interesting and no one wanted to make it. that's how this industry works.
Irony!
It's true. So I basically hung out with Eamon and a lot of guys he kind of knew.
I said, don't get arrested.
You said, don't get arrested. I didn't get arrested. basically just, it's kind of... But just spent really as much time as I could with them. I mean, sometimes it was, 5-6 days a week. Literally, from 7 a.m. to from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. because that's the kind of hours they're up. And so, it was an amazing experience, really, and that's a privilege to have that, because especially on low budget films, you just don't tend to have that kind of time. So, in a weird way, I was very lucky that the movie took a bit of time to get greenlit, because I had that extra bit to just do my method, preparation, whatever you want to call it. So, so that was extremely important to my performance. I think I don't think the performance would be what it is, if it's any good. It wouldn't be, I think if I hadn't had amount of time. Look, if I had it my way, every single movie would be like that. But it's just the way the industry is structured, the way finance is set up, and the way casting is set up, it doesn't happen like that. I played Freddie Mercury last year, and I was cast, I think it was, 10 days before filming. I mean, it's like, you kind of think, luckily I knew a lot about Freddie, but I would love to have a little bit more time, on every project, but it's just, you just can't really. So I was lucky.
It's a luxury.
But boy, did I enjoy it. That's it's due to Sally, it's like, there are very few filmmakers that will allow you to do that. And we'll actually, in a way, schedule it or kind of manipulate the situation so that your actors have that kind of freedom, that creative freedom, And it was the same on set. We were allowed to fail. When you're allowed to fail as an actor, you succeed. That's basically what happens. When you're in an environment where it's all about, getting it right, well, no, fuck that. You've got to be able to just, kind of let loose. And that's all because of her.
So, Sally, this film has won a few awards for the cinematography in particular. And it's interesting because when you think with this film, you were talking about the idea of TV documentary type of cinematography. And the awards are well-deserved. The cinematography is great. So you were working with David Redeker on this. What were your dictates to him? What did he bring to it?
Well, it was truly a collaboration, and I'd say it wasn't just a collaboration between myself and David. It was also with Stéphane Collonge, the production designer, and it was very important for it to be a three-way conversation, because where the design overlaps with the cinematography, overlaps with, the story, that's where the brilliance came. And, it really was that three-way collaboration, in terms of building the aesthetic. My first love has always been photography. And, from when I was a teenager, I used to take a lot of black and white photographs and develop them myself. And It's my appreciation of the still image, I think, that, you know, even when we were first got together, the three of us, I had a lot of photographs that I was showing them to, that were the, my inspiration for the aesthetics of the film, and a lot of ideas about framing and composition that we discussed that came from still images. I'd say more so from still images than from film or filmmakers' films. We realized that we had a very limited budget and a tiny camera package and only using available light. So it was how we were going to achieve all our aspirations for this on a shoestring. And the movie was 80% handheld. David's background is also documentaries. He is very good at allowing there to be that spontaneity, but there was a heck of a lot of very detailed preparation. For 3 weeks, we spent every single day together going through every line of the script, working out. And what came out of that was we divided the film into 5 chapters, and each chapter had its own aesthetic related to the journeys of the two brothers through the film. And we actually charted the two brothers on an X and Y axis, with happy and sad being above and below, and we worked out every single scene where they were at, and we developed 4 shooting rules to how we would shoot the movie, that we would always stick within these 4 rules. So the first rule was that the camera would always be subjective, it'd be very experience driven, so we would always, rather than being outside looking in, we would try to have the camera very viscerally inside the experience of the moment, so that we were an insider and thrown straight into the deep end. So the next rule was, so it was that subjective camera was the first rule. The second one was no master shots, which doesn't mean no wide shots, but that also took us out of the comfort zone, from when you're up against it. We shot the movie in 28 days, and like all indie films, you know, it was a mad rush, but we wouldn't allow ourselves to just fall into a formulaic way of covering something, and we would rather kind of hurl the audience into a slightly disorienting experience of the moment than spoon feed. So there was no master shots. And then the third rule was this 1.5 POV that we devised, which was, we realized the story, because it is, you do have a dual protagonist story. And when I had been writing, I'd had in my head this image of a strand of DNA, where each brother was a strand on the helix, and their lives kind of spiraled and twisted around each other, and like always connected but always apart on these different tracks. And that for me was just, you know, the spine of the film and the heart of the film. And when we actually used our X and Y axis, interestingly, it looked like a coiled piece of DNA when we connected all the dots between the two brothers' journeys, because there was the distance and the different things between them at different points. And then the moments when their paths crossed was very interesting as well. The 1.5 POV was our next rule, which was Mo was the one and Rashid was the 0.5. So when we would be in a situation where with Rashid and then Mo would walk in, suddenly the POV would flip towards Mo because he was the dominant POV. So that was one of our rules, was to be aware of that. And we devised 2 different shooting styles, one for Mo and one for Rashid, that were very subtly different. So in terms of Rashid having more compositional weight within the frame. And our final rule was to keep it simple, because it's so easy. This sounds incredibly complex, most probably, but simplicity is a true art form, and just look for that one image or that one simple way of doing it, rather than just getting too overcomplicated. And in terms of the aesthetic, the dividing it into the 5 chapters, for example, that influenced costume and hair and makeup, as well as, you know, we painted the apartment when we were in the grief section of the film. The walls were slightly a different shade, you know, and it's all these very small differences that don't take a lot of money. Actually, a coat of paint can be done very quickly and cheaply, but makes such an impact when you don't have huge sets at your disposal. The t-shirts on Mo, you know, at the very beginning we're in the childhood chapter, so the colours are a lot more vibrant, and then as he matures, the shirt is the same t-shirt but a slightly different shade, to kind of mirror his transformation. So I think a lot of attention to detail, and it is that marriage between the cinematography, design and story, where they overlap, that were the successful moments of the film. Sorry, long-winded answer.
Well, like 10 questions.
And that's our time. It is almost our time, though. So let me
ask the both of you. I mean, you do this film in the context of the United K. Now it's getting out to the world. Was your focus always on what it would mean within the country? Did you think about what you wanted to tell the rest of the world? And what would that be?
No, I think that ultimately by being very specific, that's how you are universal. And so I was trying to tell a very specific story about even not all of Hackney, a part of Hackney, and that's specifically about this kind of disenfranchised youth, really, and their struggles. And I was so close to that that, you know, it is by being, you know, it is that thing about being so specific, you then become universal. No, I wasn't thinking about the world. Mm-hmm. I think that by being so specific, I was able to tap into things that make us human, and that's what's been, you know, the emotional story of the brothers is what translates, is the fact that people can relate to this film if they're in Paris or they're in New York or they're in Cairo. They can all watch this film and go on an emotional story that's about bigger things. It's about brotherhood, it's about prejudice, it's about identity, it's about the power of unconditional love, the concept of betrayal. I mean, these are really big kind of Shakespearean things, and it's about hate and family. And you know, this I think that's what travels. It's when you're dealing with the big important stuff that life is made of.
How about you, James? What do you want Rashid, or what did you want Rashid to say to the audience?
Well, I mean, for me, look, everything Sally said is absolutely right. I think for me, you know, with Rashid's journey, it's really, and you brought it down, it's about being yourself, you know, in an uncompromising world. I think that
having the courage to be different.
It's having the courage to be different, but having the courage to be yourself, which is different in the world that you're in, right? And that's something that I think every human being can relate to. But I think it's more the execution of it. You know, anyone can write a story about that theme, but the question is, can you make a film that actually has, you know, like Sally says, that kind of universal appeal? And boy, does it have. You know,
a lot of British films don't translate. They don't actually export very well.
A lot of films, full stop, don't translate because most films are rubbish. And but it's true because it's very difficult.
No argument.
It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult to make a movie. And again, you know, close your ears, Sally. Like this, that has the kind of global appeal that it has, because I think you have to be someone who is who just understands human nature. And, you know, emotional impulse, you know, like Sally does, it's a very unusual thing. Everyone, you know, says they can, and anyone can write a script to come up with a good story, but can you actually make a film that ends up being the final product that's edited in a certain way that goes and travels to Sundance and Berlin?
We've been
and
at
Australia.
Over 40 festivals around the world. Yeah. Over,
you know, I think for me, it's a thrill just to be here in New York and be in Sarajevo and, you know, all these sort of things. And that, like Sally says, ultimately it comes from the specific. That's what the universal comes from. If you're very specific in telling your story and you tell the truth, it will have universal appeal. If it's a good film.
Sally, James, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
My Brother the Devil opened in New York on March 22nd, will open in L.A. on April 5th, and will get a national release after that. You can see the trailer and get the link to the official website over at chronicriff.com. And next week, something that's been drawing a lot of attention, we'll be talking with Pablo Berger about Blanca Nieves, his silent, black-and-white version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. You heard me, and it's a great talk to come back for that. If you want to write me, please send that email to dan@mightymoviepodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and have fun. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC, copyright 2013, Dan Persons, all rights reserved, no unauthorized duplication permitted.